Now Jan Hocken continues an ongoing conversation with Sophie Smith, an activist with No More Deaths, which offers support and aid for immigrants at the Arizona-Mexican border. Sophie is on the abuse documentation team for No More Deaths and participated in a recent report called The Disappeared, which includes the Border Patrol tactic of pushing migrants into the backcountry where the risk of death is much higher. Jan?
Welcome to KABU, Sophie Smith.
Hi, Jan. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you've been a regular on the Ol' Mole over the past few years, bringing us your seasonal reports on the borderlands in Arizona. And as a humanitarian worker with No More Deaths, you've been involved in a recent report on deaths caused by border tactics. And that report explains that, quote, people who cross the border and are never seen again do not merely go missing. They're disappeared by the U.S. border enforcement system. It's a quote from that report. I'd like you to talk about that system and the report, as well as what activists and humanitarian workers are doing in response to the Trump administration coming into power. But first, could you say a little about No More Deaths and their work that led to this report?
Sure. So the report was put out, it was a partnership effort between No More Deaths, which I've been working with since 2010. It's a direct aid organization that we walk the backcountry along the U.S.-Mexico border and provide food and water and medical care to people who are attempting to migrate into the U.S. who find themselves lost or injured or left behind and at risk of dying. And so No More Deaths' mission is to end death and suffering in the desert through this kind of direct aid approach. And then Derechos Humanos is a community organization in Tucson that was the partner in the report who run a missing migrant hotline where a family who have had members who have attempted to cross and never turned up in the U.S. or in the detention system would call into Derechos Humanos and they would provide assistance in trying to locate them. So the report was really a partnership between these two organizations doing different kinds of crisis response and relief work out here on the border.
So that coalitional effort will perhaps be important as you continue work and as the anti-immigration politics along the border are likely to intensify.
Yeah, I think so. And I think part of releasing this report, so this report calls attention to what we're calling the crisis of disappearance in the borderlands. And both organizations have firsthand experience with hundreds of cases of people who have become lost or left behind and who have perished in the backcountry. And I think it's an important moment to release the report because it sort of sets the stage for what we're dealing with moving forward. We can see that we've already, for about 20 years, had a border policy that's extremely deadly, extremely disastrous for people crossing. And so when we talk about more walls, more security infrastructure under the Trump administration, I think it's really important to start from where we are and to mark what's already been going on, kind of a bipartisan policing effort.
You've spoken before, and this report emphasizes the visibility of loss, suffering, death, and trauma in the borderlands, and how the tactics literally push migrants out of the political field of vision, putting them at risk. And they have their own charts and graphs that have numbers clearly underestimates, but they track these data over time and make claims around them. How do you think about the politics of representing the deaths and suffering in the borderlands that are so out of view? And there's often sometimes a risk, too, of over-sensationalizing extreme suffering to make the problem visible.
Sure. Yeah, I think that that's completely true, that not only metaphorically is the crisis invisible, but literally is, in the sense that since the 1990s, Border Patrol has been building walls and concentrating infrastructure around ports of entry and cities along the border where civilization can be found in order to deflect migrant traffic out into the backcountry where there's really no one around. I live in a small rural town that's in the middle of this migration corridor that flows through the desert, very far away from any access to infrastructure to rescue if someone is lost or left behind. And that means that this kind of massive scenario of human suffering is taking place mostly out of sight of the general public, and it also means that when people lose their lives from preventable maladies, just like dehydration or lower extremity injuries and things like that that strand them in the wilderness, it means that they don't have access to help and that when they perish in the backcountry, often they're never found. So we have a lot of trouble producing statistics on how many people actually die while attempting to cross the border, and this report really attempts to name that by calling it a crisis of disappearance, that there's a way in which, you know, Border Patrol reports that since the 90s about 6,000 people have died on the southwest border. Those are only the numbers that have been found, so we know that the crisis is much larger. So I think it's important to try to produce numbers but also recognize a system of violence that actually defies the ability to account. And I think that that's something that we struggle with as activists, as a way of kind of making sense of the political scenario to the public.
You also describe in the report something called the chase and scatter tactic of Border Patrol. Can you say a little more about that?
Yeah, so this is the first part of the report. It's called Deadly Apprehension Methods in the Wilderness of Chase and Scatter. So what that's looking at is once people are pushed out into these long desert crossings through the wilderness, we find that Border Patrol's activities, the actual border policing activities, are extremely dangerous, where if Border Patrol identifies people who are crossing and attempts to apprehend them, what we found is that very often this leads to chases through very dangerous and rugged terrain, chases that 41% of the chases through terrain in the backcountry we found led to injury from the terrain. So sprains, breaks, falls, even drownings when we're talking about Texas and the Rio Grande River. And then also that agents are assaulting people violently in the backcountry and using dogs. We had a lot of cases of tasers and dog bites, beatings. We found that 18% of the people chased by Border Patrol in the backcountry were assaulted by those agents, and that they're prone to excessive force in these areas no one is around. So what we came to believe as researchers was that there isn't a safe way to apprehend people in the desert, out in the backcountry, in terrain where if someone runs away, they're likely to either become injured or become lost and disoriented. So when we're talking about scatter, that's the other piece, that we found that Border Patrol is prone to use tactics like helicopters that cause groups of people migrating together to run in every direction, leading migrants to lose their companions, their guides, often any water or food they might have had with them, and to become lost in a landscape that doesn't offer many resources or access to rescue. So we're really looking at the way that everyday Border Patrol practices in the backcountry really exacerbate this missing persons crisis that we're dealing with on the ground.
There'll be many demonstrations, including here in Portland, this coming weekend, and hopefully continuing in the upcoming period, sustained resistance to the right-wing policies as well as ongoing policies of our government that are oppressive to migrants and other vulnerable groups. And part of the discourse on this casts urban and especially urban communities on the coast as more progressive and rural areas as backward, but you have quite a coalition of groups there in Arizona, in a very conservative state, that are resisting these immoral practices of Border Patrol agents authorized by our government. Can you say a little about that as a broader, perhaps, story about rural resistance as well to these oppressive practices?
Yeah, you know, I think it's an interesting moment. Out here on the border, I've been working out here for about 6 years, and I've always felt that there's been a real ethic of direct assistance in the work that's going on out here, in addition to any kind of public agitation that we're going to provide what people need on the ground and not wait for policies to change. And I think that that's become even more ingrained since the election among various groups. And it's become clear that, you know, I don't think that we can expect a lot of traction from the powers that be and a lot of responsiveness. And I see the groups that are working out here really buckling in and trying to strengthen our ties and coordinate. So at this point, we have multiple community groups for example, that are doing search and rescue on low budgets throughout the border. Groups like Aguilas del Desierto coming out of California and the South Texas Human Rights Center, and then the Ajo Samaritans and No More Deaths. So there really is a growing, strong, coordinated effort to try to provide direct relief on the ground in these areas that are, you know, if they're populated, they're populated by rural small towns. And I think the other kind of piece of that is the community organizing effort that I've been a part of to get rural communities that are living in the midst of this disaster, getting people together and saying, look, we can do what we can as residents. We can provide water. We can support medical care for folks who are crossing. So I think it's a really important time for us to hold tight to each other and really feel that we can provide for people without having to wait, because I don't think that the power structure is going to deliver right now around migrant justice, unfortunately. So I think, you know, there's really a strong sense that we need to do it ourselves.
You're saying there are these rural ethics, and one can romanticize those rural ethics, I suppose, just as one can produce a stereotype that's a degrading and oversimplified stereotype of rural life. But you're very drawn to rural life and the beauty of the desert. And even with this suffering, you've written quite eloquently about the life that continues to be lived on so many levels, and the beauty of the desert, and some of what is grounding and sustaining about communities living in the borderlands.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say a little about that, and perhaps close by talking some about coalitions that do involve perhaps some of the larger cities in Arizona or elsewhere, and alliances with rural communities?
Yeah, I mean, I think I have been very drawn to rural life on the border and to the land. When you get out here in southern Arizona, it's high desert territory. It's extremely stunning, and the folks who live out here have a deep appreciation for the land. And I think that's part of what's so heartbreaking about what's happening in the desert, and the way, you know, the report really tries to get at the way that U.S. border enforcement agencies have strategically used the land base, the desert itself, as a weapon, as a policing weapon. And
pushing people into very high-risk situations.
Yeah, and that's very heartbreaking for desert dwellers and people who really feel at home on the land. And so, yeah, and I think that it is true that out here there's a lot of interdependency and a culture of mutual aid that kind of comes naturally to people living out, and they, you know, folks need to be able to rely on each other, and that makes a lot of sense to people before or beyond politics. I found that really inspiring, to the sense that whether or not someone believes that immigration should be more legal or less legal, it's difficult to find anyone living down here who thinks that someone should lose their life in the desert for crossing into the U.S. without papers, and I find that really heartening. And I think there is somewhat of a disconnect out here in Arizona between rural groups and those in the cities, which is a little different in a place like Texas, where you have a city like McAllen that's really large, that's within the militarized zone of the border. Out here, most of the inhabitants in the militarized zone are small town residents. So there's definitely a strong coalition among us down here. And I think, you know, I can't really speak to the city context right now, probably.
Well, there's more work to be done, and hopefully we can contribute here on the Old Mole Variety Hour and bridging some of that gap. And we look forward to having you on the show again, giving us further reports. This is Jan Hawken talking with Sophie Smith with No More Deaths about their reports on the crisis in the borderlands, the crisis of the disappeared. Just in closing, can you direct us to the website where people can read the report, Sophie?
Yeah, the report is online at www.thedisappearedreport.org, and there's a beautiful video, too, that that displays our findings.
It is, yes. It's an impressive piece of work. Thanks so much, Sophie Smith, for being with
thank
us today.
Thank you for having me,
Jan. Yeah, keep up the good work.
Okay, thank you.